Okay, my name is Nancy Bates. I'm an evaluator with the Center for Clinical and Translational Sciences at University of Illinois at Chicago. I'm a full-time qualitative researcher, and one of my charges is to look at case studies of interdisciplinary research across the teams. So I guess I'm responding to something that you talked about, Dan, about the value of using mixed methods research, which we're using, and what some of the most important questions for qualitative researchers to address. And secondly, I also wonder if there's other qualitative researchers here who would be interested in getting together to talk about these issues and how our work might be going.
Yeah, I think in terms of the issues that could be addressed qualitatively, I think we're developing a great toolbox of measures and metrics. Alan Porter mentioned the Interdisciplinarity Index, which looks at the breadth with which scientists reference other fields in their papers, for example. We have science mapping strategies that Kotte and Nash and others have developed to track the growth of networks across different fields, and some really sophisticated quantitative approaches. Bill mentioned concept mapping. And I think one of the questions that sometimes comes up when you look at a very elaborated network of collaborations within an initiative or between them is, what's the relative impact of a particular band where you've got two or more people collaborating with each other? What's the product of that collaboration? What's the impact on the field of those ideas or their publications? So I think it's important to begin to mesh these quantitative measures with peer appraisals of the significance or the subjective notion of, you know, how much this particular contribution is adding to a field or expanding a field. And it's not that any one of those methods can stand on their own, but it's more a matter of sort of putting them together to cross-corroborate what each of them is showing, or to compensate for the relative limits and strengths of each methodology. So I'm a big believer in trying to put, you know, those diverse methods together.
You alluded to Alan's scheme a moment ago, and it gives me a chance to apologize for Joanne for failing to mention you earlier. I was the project that Kotte and Alan and I have been working on. Could you please mention where it's being published? The Journal of Infometrics piece? Infometrics, the Journal of Infometrics piece, and so we can get that. Alan, do you have the citation? Because it refers to both your earlier... We'll get it. But it pulls that together, and the methods piece and the others as well.
Let me add that those of you that actually do team science, what would be helpful for those that study team science is access to these scientists. And organizational researchers have addressed this issue of access to organizations to study them, and we really need to figure out a procedure to respect intellectual property, but also have the openness so we can understand the processes that emerge within research centers and within research teams. And that's a significant hurdle, and it's one that we need to address sooner rather than later.
Picking up on that, it would be nice to know, Nancy, what case studies you, what readings you are doing. One of the really important things here is bibliographical sharing, building up a body of knowledge. So if you could let us know which pieces you've been looking on interdisciplinary research that you have found most insightful.
Well, I'm just starting.
Good. Well, stay in touch.
You guys too.
Yep. Hi, I wanted to bring the discussion back and out a little bit, if that's okay. I don't need to be sold on the importance of team approaches in team science. I'm here, obviously, but there are people in senior leadership in academic institutions and government that may still need to understand this. So my question is, how do you shift the culture of an institution from individual-based science to these team approach sciences, given the constraints and the opportunity costs, Dan, that you were talking about? So looking at release time for faculty, looking at junior faculty and senior faculty, looking at faculty that are focused on trying to obtain tenure and all these other constraints that are there. How do you work within that from an organizational perspective?
I think traditionally universities have been among the most non-supportive institutions in terms of promoting collaboration. It's so much emphasis is on individual contribution, on evaluations of individuals, what they produce apart from or parsed away from their teammates. And I think, as you said, the culture is changing, and I've seen more and more universities issuing memoranda and statements, for example, by promotion and tenure committees that collaborative work is valued and individuals' contributions as part of large co-authorship teams is going to be weighted more heavily. Junior scholars are being encouraged to participate in team endeavors more, even though, you know, traditionally they've been more wary about getting involved in these large sort of cumbersome collaborations when they're coming up for tenure. So I think the culture is shifting gradually, and it takes a while to kind of re-steer the ship. But universities are starting to get the point that the world is moving in a direction of team science, and they have to become better adapted to promoting that and facilitating it than they have in the past.
Right, but like as a big institution, like we have, I'm from George Washington University, it's a really big ship to try to steer in a different direction. We have these things, but I guess what I would like to know is from successful other institutions who've been able to do this already, what did you guys do?
I think leaders, as I said before, at the initiative level, leaders at the university or agency institutional level play a huge role. The president of Arizona State University has made a commitment to reshape that university as a transdisciplinary learning center where departments are being restructured to go across fields and criteria for promotion are being restructured. And I think that's happening in a number of cases around the country and internationally where this commitment is being made at the top, you know, to issue a value statement or a mission statement that this will be supported and here's how we're going to do it. And I think you have to get very explicit and strategic about facilitating it. It's not just going to happen if you don't address it proactively.
Yeah, let me reframe that answer and suggest that what administrators pay attention to are outcomes. And if you show them the patents, the innovations, et cetera, that arise more likely out of interdisciplinary collaborations, they'll pay attention. And I think you could share with your deans and provosts and presidents the paper by Wakdi Jones and Utsi that showed the increasing influence of collaborations on the productions of knowledge. That article that was published a few years ago, I think, was kind of a watershed moment that woke people up to the fact that collaboration was really much more prominent in science and in innovation and the production of knowledge that people really recognize. By the same token, you could do some benchmarking and show what interdisciplinary universities have been producing and their increasing impact. So get them to pay attention to the metrics that are important to them, and then they'll be more willing to implement interdisciplinary solutions and processes within that university.
It's really important, too, to have the precedents in hand. You made such a good point when you said, what are other people doing? Because that can be a powerful legitimation. Peter Lang, who's provost at Duke University, likes to say, you have to remember this is a small ship. It's nimble. We can steer it. And other people on the opposite side of that say it's very hard to change a large bureaucracy. But the CTS movement and some other developments are good examples of where within enclaves in universities there have been pushes for this. I wanted to recommend three resources that would help give you some precedence in your pocket. A few years ago, the Council of Environmental Deans and Directors issued a wonderful document. It's called Guidelines for Hiring, Interdisciplinary Hiring, Tenure, and Promotion. It's terrific. I don't have the URL in my head, but
I'll make it available. I have it.
Okay, super. Yeah, you Google CEDD and Guidelines for Interdisciplinary Hiring, and you'll get to it. And the Oxford Handbook of Interdisciplinarity is about to appear. As an associate editor, I must say I can't be soon enough dealing with 41 authors, but we deliberately courted two chapters for that book. We courted a chapter by the people who were behind the initiative at CEDD to do the guidelines, and we courted a chapter on how graduate students negotiate their careers, moving from the graduate student phase into junior faculty phase. And I'm really embarrassed to say this, but I have a new book that's just come out, Creating Interdisciplinary Campus Cultures, and what I did there was to deliberately collect the precedents, the guidelines, the kinds of things people need to walk into their own institutions and say, here, It's not just me.
Great. Thank you so much.
I'm Nancy Jones, and I'm at NIAID, Allergies and Infectious Diseases. But I have a question that really, from the last two speakers, something that was said about how, you know, in this approach of team, what's our product? But I wonder how this would go against a framework of the epistemology of science or the nature of science. Because I think sometimes the problems are more short-term and more approaches are more like a technology, and maybe the disciplines remain separate to solve the problem and they move on. And then in the case that was Daniel was talking about, when we make interdisciplinary, I mean, we actually create a new community, a new knowledge base, a new way. In order to, when our product is knowledge, it depends on a shared understanding and conceptual models and even other experts to judge it. And in a sense, I think, Julie, you were saying that, you know, you create this new language. It's more than a language. It's an understanding of what really, you know, like how do we prove what we know? So how do we marry that with some of the rich base and the epistemology of science and the nature of science when we're thinking about team science?
Just a quick comment. I think that's a good example of why we need something like a theory of tasks. So we need to understand what is the purpose for which these teams are getting together. So if it's to produce a new technology, then you could probably have a fluid team, multidisciplinary team, engineers, scientists, what have you, getting together. They come and they solve the problem, and then they separate. But if it's the production of knowledge and not a new technology, then you start thinking more about the epistemological issues associated with knowledge creation when disciplines interact and the work that Julie's been talking about.
I think it also entails dismantling a dichotomy, a very dangerous dichotomy, that there's interdisciplinarity and there's disciplinarity. As you take a look at the accrediting reports from professional organizations, you take a look at the latest state of the discipline reports from disciplines, and you see that it's a much more nuanced, much more complex relationship. So it's not an either or, it's a both and then being able to see within that, make those arguments based on that. Because if you ask the question, what is science, you're also asking the question, well, what is disciplinary science? But the argument about what is science and the changing nature of science is changing a great deal. So making good on that rhetoric of change.
I think one of the outcomes of team collaborations is often the training outcomes and the creation of intellectual capital in people who inculcate a more inclusive cross-domain approach to seeking knowledge, integrating it. And I think those training outcomes are a very important focus for the future to try to assess what those are and to see when they're most likely to be, you know, very productive and in terms of the careers that people go on to establish after being exposed to transdisciplinary science and practice.
Morning. David Stone, Northern Illinois University. And I didn't plan to stand behind that question, but I have what amounts to a follow-up, which is that from the tradition that I come from, sciences are understood as regional ontologies, that you establish the science when you establish the boundaries or domain of a regional ontology. So biology has the domain of life, and it has defined life in the terms it needs to do to follow on with epistemologies and methodologies to study life. And famously, it's been said by I don't know how many people that no science can study itself. So you can't use physics to study physics, right? You can't use biology to study biology. Which, as I was listening to this morning's conversation, raises the question, can you use science to study the science of team science? And it occurs to me that there's an epistemological barrier there, and there always is. And so, you know, again, I come from a tradition where the differences between disciplines or sciences is not that we have varying perspectives on a shared object, but we actually have different objects, right? There's a different ontology for every discipline looking at what we would think of as the same thing. And so when you get into issues of perspective or language, if you fail to recognize that ontological level, you inevitably run into problems. And so it occurs to me, Julie, if you'll sort of note this for historical purposes, if two or more of my humanities colleagues will join me at lunch over tuna fish, we'll need to inaugurate the philosophy of the science of team science here, because there is a whole range of philosophical questions about how the science of team science can proceed and how team science can proceed that need to be addressed at that level, because there's a, through all the talks this morning, there is a shared epistemology about how we do this, because we're all coming from positive sciences of one variety or another, and we're unable, therefore, to get below that that shared epistemology and explore things that are going on at a deeper level. So I'll invite people to meet me for tuna at lunch to talk about those kind of issues.
And it will become April 22nd, 2010, the Tuna Summit.
See, I knew you were the right person. So if you could just, you know.
Or the next conference could be the science of the science of team science.
Or the philosophy of the science of the science of team science.
I wanted to add to that. Dan mentioned Arizona State University and the work that Michael Crow has been doing there. I think the problem arises from what you call the domain ontology of scientific disciplines. And one of my favorite quotes in here by Salzinger is that the way nature has divided up its problems is not the way universities have divided up their departments. And that it speaks to a very simple truth. And this is, I think, what Michael Crow is trying to address. He's trying to create problem-focused research centers, not discipline-focused research centers. And when you recognize that very important distinction, you'll begin to see that interdisciplinary succeeds when the focus is on the problem and not on the disciplines that are trying to solve that problem.
Yeah, sorry, if I could just follow up on that, because that was great, and I'll have to write that down. But this goes beyond that in the sense that one of the things that keeps coming up here is complexity, which is obviously a term that comes from a new science that has arisen over the last 15, 20 years. But what that continues to leave out in this problem-based approach are wicked problems, problems that aren't amenable to predefinition, where part of the problem of the problem is that nobody can agree on how to define the problem. And so all kinds of social problems are wicked problems. And if we're going to have a science of the study of wicked problems, which we need to advance our ability to manage wicked problems, not solve them, because they're not puzzles to be solved, we need to move away from the sciences that are bounded by the epistemology of complexity to this notion of wickedness and try to get toward how we address wicked problems, too. So